Now, Daly Mining's Carmichael Coal Mine in Queensland would be the world's biggest new thermal coal project. However, Adani Mining is only one part of a larger multinational entity, Adani Enterprises. Its corporate interests are spread globally, so Adani should be judged on their activities worldwide. To examine the record of Adani as a global corporate citizen, I'm speaking to Walkley Award-winning independent journalist Michael West. Welcome, Michael.
Good to be on the show, Dave.
We'll start off by talking about some of the things that you've published by heading to South Africa and talking about Adani's dealings there. You wrote of their connection to arms dealing. Can you take us through that?
Well, the brief story is that there's a huge scandal engulfing the South African government and its major monopoly utilities player, which is a thing called Eskom, which has got coal mines and everything. It's vertically integrated and it provides power for South Africans. And it's been engulfed in this scandal where a number of people, including the chairman, have just left. And it's a very tainted situation. And it looks as though it might take down the prime minister as well, whose son has had dealings with a guy called Gupta. And Gupta is infamous in India as a corrupt businessman. He's been involved in probes there over the years for corruption and arms dealing. And the Gupta family has infiltrated the South African energy hierarchy and the government and got favours, basically. And this thing is just huge in South Africa. It's a scandal much bigger than anything which has touched our government here for years. Now, as part of that story, which is based on a whole lot of leaked emails from the Gupta family, there's many, many, it's a huge trove of emails. It's emerged that the Guptas were trying to start up in India again, despite the fact that they'd been banned there, and they were going to get Adani involved in Gautam Adani, involved in taking about a quarter of a company or a very large cornerstone stake in an arms dealing enterprise. Now that, as far as we know, never happened, but Adani has conceded that it was in talks, or it has been in talks, to get involved in the arms and weapons trade. And I just wrote a story the other day saying, you know, given everything we know now, the Cayman Island connections and everything like that of this Indian counterpart in the world's biggest coal mine, Carmichael and Galilee Basin, which is yet to be, it's got the green light now, but yet to go ahead, you would have to question whether Adani could pass the fit and proper persons test to be awarded so many subsidies from the Australian taxpayer. They've got potentially a $1 billion rail line from a government fund, the Northern Australian Infrastructure Facility. That's a discount loan which may never be paid back. To build a rail line, they've got an unlimited water license. You know, the farmers are up in arms about this in Queensland because coal is a very thirsty thing, requires a lot of water. And they've also got a royalties holiday for the early part of the project. So there's no royalties, there's going to be no royalties and no tax paid in the early years on something which is an economic, highly questionable economically anyway, because thermal coal prices are falling as renewables become more efficient. So overall, you have a situation where, you know, politicians and you know, bureaucrats keep trying to give taxpayer money away for fossil fuel projects. And the counterparts to these deals, like the Adani family, are questionable candidates for taxpayer handouts.
So let's go back to the South African connection. You say there were, hundreds, thousands of emails that were found out about?
Yeah, that's right. Somebody associated with, or that might have been a hack, we're not quite sure, but somebody has leaked a whole lot of emails to the press over there, and as part of that email leak, the name Adani has bobbed up a few times. So I just merely got hold of some of that stuff and published just the very basics of it. There are no details out yet. I mean, I haven't got the emails myself, and I'm relying on second-hand sources, but certainly they haven't denied it at this point, Des.
Oh, so how long since you've known about this?
5 days now. It's been out there, and I don't think the story's even been followed, really. I mean, it would be good to sort of get the emails and see what other connections the Adani family has had with the Gupta family. The Adani family, of course, is very close. Gautam Adani is very close to the Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi. And Modi and Malcolm Turnbull were in talks the other day, and no doubt the Adani mine, the prospective Adani mine, as you say, the biggest new thermal coal mine in the world and a highly controversial project, was part of these discussions. So there are these connections, and I think that basically they deserve to see the light of day and they deserve, you know, scrutiny.
So some of the connections within the ruling party of South Africa, you said before Prime Minister, didn't you mean the President, Jacob Zuma?
Yeah, the President, sorry, not Prime Minister, the President, Jacob Zuma. So what had happened was Zuma's son had been involved in a deal. Basically what had happened is the Guptas had tried to convince Eskom, that's the big electricity provider, to give them money so they could buy a thermal coal mine along with the son of President Jacob Zuma. Now, the seller was Glencore, the notorious Glencore, so I mean, you've got to be out of bed fairly early in the morning to put one over Glencore. But nonetheless, they bought this thing from Glencore. And of course, you know, this is just a no-risk deal, given the connections, because Eskom was going to buy the coal from this coal mine. So Eskom was going to buy the coal from the coal mine, which is owned by the Gupta family and the son of President Jacob Zuma. It's kind of like, you know, the equivalent here would be Malcolm Turnbull's son buying a coal mine with a corrupt joint venture partner. And we're not suggesting, of course, that this is even contemplated ever. It wouldn't be in this country. And then would buy back the coal from a government-controlled entity. So it's a highly questionable deal. And as a result of these revelations and other revelations, there's been a stream of directors leave the board, tainted by the scandal. And it's bringing down politicians as well, and it threatens to envelop the president himself, obviously, because his son's involved. And it's on some pages every day over there in the press. And the Adani thing, to be fair, is just a sideshow in this whole thing. But nonetheless, Adani is caught up in it at the edges because it's been named in these emails.
Now, you mentioned Glencore. Are they a multinational corporation?
Well, Glencore is probably Australia's biggest coal producer. They've got thermal coal and coking coal. Thermal coal is the stuff that goes into electricity, the dirty stuff. And coking coal is the stuff that goes into the production of iron ore. Glencore's got both. It's a very large, its head office is in Switzerland. It's a notorious tax avoider. It's been not doing too well here in recent years because, the coal prices have dived, although they've bounced a bit now. But, of course, even Glencore don't want the Adani mine to go ahead because it'll hurt the coal price for them and the other existing coal producers in Australia. So they don't want it to go ahead. Nobody seems to want it to go ahead except, some politicians in the Liberal Party federally and the Labor Party in Queensland.
So there is actually a connection between Glencore and Adani already because Glencore's coal gets shipped out through Adani's Abbot Point terminal, doesn't it?
That's right. And they've, in fact, been in a stoush. They've been in court about the terms of this deal because, of course, the problem with these arrangements is Adani already owns the Terminal 1 at Abbot Point. It wants to build another terminal as well, which it also wants to build privately. not in the public Adani company here, but privately. You see, because when you've got a monopoly coal export terminal, such as the case with the Newcastle terminal in New South Wales and other terminals around the country, they can charge pretty much what they like, subject to regulation. They can charge pretty much what they like. So Glencore has been in a legal fight with Adani over access and pricing arrangements for this Abbot Point terminal, which is owned by the Adanis.
And there was a spill there recently, wasn't there?
I'm not sure on the spill. I mostly cover the business side of things. The environmental side of things is pretty much taken for granted. The environmentalists are all up in arms about this project because, of course, it will damage the Great Barrier Reef because they'll have to dredge offshore part of the reef, and so therefore there'll be damage to the natural habitat, and there'll also be damage from inland, just in the coastal marshes and so on. From, I think there was a spill there, I think that's the one you're referring to, just near the terminal. But also with the water rights, the problem with this is that, you know, there's only so much water there, and the more that Adani use, the less is available potentially for the farmers. And also you've got the issue of whether the water will be contaminated as well. So there are some serious environmental reasons, and the environmentalists have been against this mine, from the start, not only because of those issues, but also because really it's hard for Australia to justify its commitment to the Paris climate change talks, which are, you know, keeping in perspective global warming temperature down to 2 degrees. Because this is such a massive polluting project for the atmosphere. And the other aspect, of course, is that India, this is the irony for me, that India itself is pursuing a very aggressive transition to renewable energy, very aggressive. And Adani, in fact, is involved in that itself. And Adani, in fact, is building a solar plant in South Australia, and the outback of South Australia. So it's in Seoul already, but it's hedging its bets, you know. It's a company that wants to make as much money as it can, and that's fair enough. But the interesting thing is in India, they vowed to shut down or to close off import and thermal coal by 2021. So that's in 4 years. They say, officially, they won't be importing any more coal. And they're on track to do that because they've got domestic coal production, which they've ramped up. And they've also got this aggressive, push for renewable energy, which is ramping up really quickly. And so it's kind of extremely strange, bizarre, that Australia is backing this coal project, where the coal's all going to be exported to India, when India won't need this coal and officially is saying that it won't need it. So it's one of the strangest projects I've ever seen in terms of it's economics, because the thermal coal price, if you look at the thermal coal price, it's around about $80 US a tonne or thereabouts. And at that level, the Carmichael mine, the prospective Carmichael mine owned by Adani, that can probably make money just at that level or break even. But the thermal coal price futures market is down around 60. So significantly lower. And at that level, the mine doesn't make any money. So we've got to be wondering why the government is so keen to back this thing when it won't make any money on the futures market. And this the futures market is, people are actually putting their dollars there to hedge forward. These are coal producers. They're people that know the industry that set these futures prices. And they're saying the prices of thermal coal is going to fall. It's going to fall for two reasons, because the world's well supplied with coal and gas, there's plenty of it around, and households around the world are becoming more efficient, so they're not using as much energy because of efficient appliances like heaters and so on, and also because of renewable energy, because it's getting cheaper every year, considerably cheaper.
The body that will be setting up the mine, if it goes ahead, will be Adani Mining, but you point out that the government loan would go to an entity of Adani's in the Cayman Islands. Is that still Adani Mining, or is that another offspin of Adani within their big web?
No, see, that's right. Well, this is the another irony, Des, because what you have here is the Adani Mining is the limited company. Adani Mining Limited, which is an Australian entity which they've set up, which is owned by Adani Enterprises of India. Now, that's where the coal and the mine will be, but the rail line and the port are in these other vehicles whose ownership wends its way back to the Cayman Islands via Singapore. Now, you know, the thing about it is Singapore is a tax haven in itself, but of course the Cayman Islands are zero tax. And that's where the Adani family has this private vehicle in the Cayman Islands. So what's happening here is that we're potentially giving a taxpayer loan of $1 billion, subsidised discount loan, to an entity which is controlled in the Cayman Islands. And so all the risk from the project, that is the mining risk, goes to a limited company with no assets, which is Adani Mining, right? So if that tips over, they just go, "Oh, sorry, we're broke." That liability ends up with creditors and the Australian taxpayers. While the other assets, that's the assets where you actually clip the ticket on the volume. So, you know, you can charge what you like because it's a monopoly on the coal as it comes through for your own rail line and your own port infrastructure. So you charge. So the risk is with the taxpayer, and the profits, the potential upside from clipping the ticket on every wagon of coal which goes along that rail line, goes to the Adani family in the Cayman Islands. So, you know, the government seems to be happy for this arrangement to exist, potentially, and this is what people are up in arms about. This is why people need to understand the economics of it, because all the risk is with the taxpayer, and the rewards with the Adani billionaire's family.
So let's go over some of the actual active support and wave-throughs by so many of the governments and the regulators. They've been given an unlimited water licence by the Queensland government. They've been given a royalties deferral arrangement, and as you say, that discount loan is sitting in the hands to be decided by the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility. Now, let's go to that facility for starters. What sort of financial rigour do they have to apply for something like this?
Well, that's a good question. The information memorandum for the NAIF, as it's called, or the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility, which is a $5 billion government, well, its critics call it a coal slush fund, but it's $5 billion concessional loans, which can be given out at the discretion of a board of seven or eight directors. Now, those directors include people that are in the coal industry or have been in the coal industry. The NAIF mandate, investment mandate, covers all sorts of infrastructure, water, airports, rail, just any kind of infrastructure that contributes to the economy. So the point of NAIF, the whole purpose of it, according to its own investment mandate, is to build infrastructure in Northern Australia. But so far, the only projects which we understand that it has under evaluation is this billion-dollar rail line for the Carmichael Coal Project, which is Adani's project. And the other thing is that Matt Canavan, the Minister for Resources in Northern Australia, has been urging taxpayer money also to be spent on new coal-fired power plants. Now, the problem with coal-fired power plants, the old ones can be, if they're efficient, can be producing very cheap energy, albeit dirty energy. But now we know, this year we can say with certainty, that new renewable energy projects are cheaper to establish than new coal-fired power plants. So it's cheaper if you're spending money on new projects to make it renewable rather than coal. And so it's bizarre to think that we'd start building in Queensland somewhere, especially Queensland, which has got so much sun, new coal-fired power plants. Now, we don't know exactly what NAIF's got under consideration because it's a very secretive body. It doesn't produce much in the way of... doesn't disclose much in the way of information. But we know that, you know, the purpose of it is to build all kinds of infrastructure. But so far, the only projects we know of that it's looking at are sort of coal-related projects, and it has some coal people on the board. In fact, most of the people on the board have strong connections to the resources industry. So we're not, there's nobody with civil engineering expertise on there, except perhaps there's a former Country Party guy from the Northern Territory who has some airport and railway expertise. He built that. He was the guy behind the Alice Springs to Darwin, you know, the north-south railway. So there's a little bit of expertise, but there's no civil engineers. It's all resources industry people, lawyers, and professional director types. So really, and there's no disclosure. So you really got to wonder what the government's doing with this $5 billion of concessional loans. Because let's say they give the money to one of these projects and the project falls over, which in the case of Adani, I believe strongly that it will, because the world doesn't need this new coal, let alone the environmental things. Just economically, there's too much coal around, you know. And if we do it, it'll drive down the price of our other coal exports. So really, it's surplus to requirements. We just don't need it. So it's pretty bizarre that they should be considering projects of this kind when there are so many potentially valuable projects we could be looking at.
It was interesting that Adani sort of half cancelled the mine and then they came back just days ago saying, yeah, it's full on. So I can't see the rationale for them doing their turnaround.
Well, this is what a lot of people can't understand, because they keep on getting regulatory approval. They got their final environmental regulatory approval. They got their water licence. They got their, you know, potentially the rail line's going to happen. They've got native title stuff from the local indigenous landowners groups and so on. That's very questionable, that process. I've written a couple of stories about that where, you know, they bust whole bunches of indigenous people in to vote in their favour at certain meetings and so on. But, you know, all these approvals have now been had, but for a project of this size, you need to hire a couple of hundred engineers to start, and they haven't done that, as far as my sources say. They haven't done that, and they keep on playing the government for approval after approval, and now the thing's approved, but they don't seem to be moving ahead with it. You know, I think there's two things here. The politicians realise it's probably a dud project, but none of them on either side of the aisle, Labor and Liberal, none of them want to look anti-jobs, you know, by saying this is a dud project, it shouldn't go ahead. We shouldn't even be thinking about giving any taxpayer relief for these guys. So I think there's a political thing, probably some votes in marginal seats, that kind of thing. But certainly they can be going ahead, but there's no evidence that they are going ahead. And they've said that it would start 2 years ago, and they've kept on putting it off year after year. So it's a strange thing. The whole thing is very, very strange.
Oh, it's been really good talking to you, Michael. You say you are an independent journalist, you're a former Walkley winner, and now you're publishing online. Do you want to give a bit of a spiel for that so people can follow up on your stories?
Oh, thank you, Des. Yes, the website is called michaelwest.com.au. I named it after myself, not because of for egotistical reasons, but because Fairfax fired me and had a lot of readers, and so I think I was treading on too many toes, so they fired me. So I thought, well, the best way to approach this thing, if I want to continue as a journalist, which I did independently, which is a struggle, is to call it after myself and to exploit the martyrdom factor. And it seems to work because I've had a lot of good audience. I mean, it's a struggle to make a living when you haven't got a big organisation behind you, and you can get, you know, you get threatened with lawsuits and things. But it's very rewarding working for yourself. And when anybody complains, there's only one person to complain to. So that's been it's been a rewarding, if not very, very busy experience. And So, you know, it's all good. So I've got a couple of people sort of helping me in you know, often for free and so on. But it's been pretty rewarding. And these days on social media, you don't need the distribution of, you know, newspapers and so on. You can actually just get a website, put your stories on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. And sometimes you can get 10,000 readers on a story, and that's more than I would have got if I was working at Fairfax on many stories. So it's been a very rewarding experience.
Well, thanks very much, Michael, for coming on and giving that analysis of and exposing what a dunny is like, not just in Australia but overseas. It seems as though in this example and probably lots and lots of others, politics and scandal are on two sides of the same coin.
Often they are, unfortunately, Des, but we'll keep an eye on them, eh? And it's been great being on the show.
Okay, thanks very much.
Good on you. Right, bye.